Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Michigan versus Penn State, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all of the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29-degree beer. Joining us now is Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, always appreciate our weekly visits with you. It seems like the hottest topic, at least across the NHL, is what in the world is Edmonton going to do? That a team that is struggling mightily with two of the best players in the sport has no business struggling. But I was listening to the Get Your Back podcast. I promise I wasn't cheating on the 32 Thoughts podcast, Elliot. I promise.
That's important. It's important.
But I was listening to the Get Your Back podcast, and there was a potential trade that was brought up of Edmonton potentially trading for Predators' young goalie Yaroslav Askarov. I know last week when we were talking, you said you hadn't heard of any trades on the horizon, but do you think that that could be a potential move that the Predators would be willing to make?
Look, I think this. To be honest, I was surprised you didn't ask me about Saros. I figured that was the one that was coming in hot. So, Carolyn, once again, you have that 1970s Steve Carlton style curveball that nobody can hit.
I like to keep you on your toes, Elliot.
You do a great job of it, Carolyn. I got to say that. Look, like the one thing I always look at with this is. Edmonton's window is now. It has to be now. Now, so the one thing, whatever you guys do, if Nashville's going to trade Askarov or Saros or anywhere else, the price is going to be high. Like, it's going to be, like, you'll remember last year at the draft, there were all these rumors about Nashville having Askarov out there, but it was for one of the top picks. Like, they were talking about a top 10 pick. So I think if you're Edmonton and you're going and Nashville's going to ask you for the best assets you have, you better be sure that whatever you're getting is going to give you the best chance to win the Stanley Cup now and for years to come. And I just wonder, like, you guys see Askarov more than I do. If you're Edmonton, are you making that gamble right now with everything that's on the line? I mean, if you think you can do it, then you do it. But it's a big gamble to me.
Well, what's less of a gamble is the name that you just brought up, UC Saros, at least for Edmonton as far as they're concerned. Do you see Saros being a potential trade piece?
Well, I think, Carolyn, honestly, if you're Edmonton and you're not calling Nashville about either guy, but particularly Saros, right, you're not doing your job. Like, you have to call them and you have to say, look, you know our situation. If we wanted to do this, what would we be talking about? And teams have called the Predators about Saros going back to last year's trade deadline. Obviously, nothing's happened, but they've called. And what Barry Trotz is doing is he is saying, look, before we even entertain this, this is what it's going to take. And I guarantee to you that Edmonton has a pretty good idea of what it's going to take. And at some point, they're going to have to make a decision. Do we want to enter that, or is that too rich for us? And because, like, I was watching him the other night in Calgary. I mean, I know you guys are watching him too. Like, the only reason you guys were still in Alberta in the third period of that game was because Saros stood on his head. He's a difference maker. He is. But if I'm the Predators, I'm not doing it unless I can look at our fans and say, you know what? You're gonna understand why we did it.
Now, Elliot, do you see under any circumstance that it happens? Obviously, the trade deadline is far away, but do you see it happening under any circumstance?
The one thing I really do feel, Derek, is, you know, sometimes teams are in position where they say we've got to take the plunge now. And it might not be the most ideal circumstances. Nobody ever likes to deal from a position of weakness, and that's where the Oilers are right now. But sometimes you have to say, this is the point in our existence where we have to throw all our chips on the table and say, screw it, we're all in. And Edmonton's at that point right now. They this is their window. The move they made the other day, putting a $25 million goalie on waivers, you don't do that if it's situation normal. You do that because you know that you're at a point in your existence where this is the kind of thing you have to do. So, Derek, what percentage would I put on it happening? I don't know that. But I don't think it's impossible that Edmonton is sitting there right now thinking, this is the price on goalie A, this is the price on goalie B, this is the price on goalie C. What do we want to pay? And I would think Saros would be one of those goalies.
Now, a guy that that I want to ask you about, and I asked Willie about him earlier in the week, Roman Josi, what he's been able to do as of late. Started off a little slow in this new offense, but it seems like over the last five or six games, he sort of picked everything up. He scored his first goal a couple of games ago, and it seems after that he started to – it seems like now he's getting settled into his new role. How do you see it?
Well, you know, the one thing I think is this. Like, Derek, like, I never worry about Roman Josi. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he was worried about it. I'm sure he was tired of being asked about it. Like, nobody wants to have that bagel next to your name, especially if you're a scorer, a really elite offensive player as he is. But I never worry about him. I always assume it's going to come, and I always assume he's going to figure it out. You know, there's no question that that Brunette is trying some new things. I think Josi has a lot more freedom than the average player would have. But again, like every time that a team plays Nashville, he's the guy that everyone's trying to stop. So I see that, Derek, as just a slump more than I see it as anything to be worried about.
We'll talk with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. You can take a listen to it. Elliot, on my way to work, I was listening to the podcast, and I used one of your phrases or analogies that a GM told. I think you said a GM told you, because you were discussing Edmonton and their whole, their head coach and fire, not fire. And you said, well, first, it's not about firing. It's about who and what will make us better. Before we even get to firing, who and what will make us better? Do you think every GM approaches it that way?
First of all, Derek, you have to Venmo me $50 for stealing one of my sandwiches.
No problem at all.
I honestly think this, Derek. I think they try to. Mm-hmm. I really do think, but, you know, it's like my grandmother always had a saying, which I love. She always said, you plan, God laughs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think you always try to. But sometimes I think you get boxed into corners where, you know, you say, geez, I have to do something here. And maybe this is what I'd like to do, but this is what I have to do. Like, I remember when Brian Burke was general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, they had a stretch where Ron Wilson was the coach, and it was just going terrible. And Burke kept on telling me, I'm not firing him. I'm not firing him. I'm not doing it. And then one night they were losing at home, and the crowd started going, fire Wilson. There was a very loud and long fire Wilson chant. And Berkey just said, like, he saw it wasn't turning around. He said he saw the toll it was taking on Wilson. And he just said, you know what, that's enough. Now, it turned out he had somebody that he could bring in, and that was Randy Carlyle, who he won a Stanley Cup with in Anaheim. But that was one situation that I do remember where I know he didn't want to do it, but the fan reaction said, it made him say, that's enough.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts. And Elliot, I'm really curious. It's been interesting perspective for me being up here in Canada on this long trip and watching all the coverage of the Oilers and even the Maple Leafs, who have had some ups and downs, the Senators, some really intriguing stories here. But I'm curious too with the whole trade thing for Edmonton. What does Edmonton really have to trade? They've been in the win now mode for a while. I don't think they have a deep prospect pool, but maybe you can help me on that. And I know they wouldn't want to trade somebody who's a regular player off their roster right now, because it's kind of a top heavy roster as it is. So, like, what would a trade talk start with if they're trying to shop around for a goalie?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, they still have their first rounder this year. They have some first round picks coming up, so you can start with that. They have, they have a young defenseman named Philip Broberg, who was their 70th at the start of the year. He wasn't playing. They sent him to the American Hockey League. Their team is in Bakersfield, California. They sent him down there to play. He's a talented kid who's, you know, at the point where he's going to need an opportunity. I think that he would be the name you'd hear, or a couple of or picks. I think those are the kinds of guys that you would hear as part of it. Now, the other thing too is they probably would have to trade not one of their top players, but another player, whether a depth defenseman or a depth forward, because a lot of these goalies we're talking about, like, you know, Saros's number, Binnington's been rumored he makes $6 million. I don't even know if that's even possible. Other goalies are in the $4 million range. Like Edmonton, like a lot of teams, is right tight at the cap. Like, you guys are in a uniquely good position around the league. So I think it would probably take like a Broberg, a first round pick or two, or a situation, and probably a depth forward or defenseman, simply because of the cap machinations.
A couple of interesting Predators issues to ask you about, Elliot, with your outside perspective here. One of them is, you know, Phil Tomasino looks like he's going to be back in there tonight, but Andrew Burnett's been looking at a lot of the young prospects, and a couple of them are doing well, like Luke Evangelista is looking good right now. Somebody like a Yusso Parson has been a little bit up and down, and Tomasino's had trouble getting the lineup. So I'm just curious, that process, I think we knew, being realistic, that not everybody was going to blossom, but what are you hearing about, you know, say Tomasino in particular, because it seems like Barry Trotz, he was talking on our station the other day about the process of trying to figure out when is it time to send a guy down to get his confidence back, or how does a guy earn more ice time?
Well, I think the one thing that I always believe is that you have to put people in position to succeed. And I think that Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett talk about that a lot. What is the best possible situation to put a player in a position to succeed? Like, I actually have been watching Parson a little bit lately because, you know, we had a chance to talk to him overseas, so I've been kind of following him a bit. And, it's clear to me that, when he's up in the lineup, he's a more effective player than when he's down in the lineup. Now, some of that, I think, is on him. You have to find a way to be effective no matter where you are. But, you know, I think it is pretty normal that players are going to play better if they're surrounded by better players. I think the one thing I think with a lot of teams is, I think the real challenge that a lot of them face is the way we're so quick to judge now. If a player is sent down from the NHL to the American Hockey League, it's almost like a failure. And that is something I fight at so much, but it's not an easy one to win because, you know, fans see you as a failure. You feel you're like a failure. And it's really stupid. It's not true. Like, Tomasino's still a really young guy who's got a lot to learn. He's got a bright future ahead of him. You know, some people are just not ready at the same speed as others. And that's the one thing I bet you that Trotz is thinking about is, if we have to send this guy down, how do we do it, or anyone else, how do we do it so that we put him in the best possible position to succeed and not get a long-term, it crushes him or shatters his confidence or anything like that. That is the thing a lot of these teams weigh.
Speaking of going on a different path, I want to ask you about Tommy Novak, who's been a really interesting story, because he was a guy that was sort of flying under the radar for a long time, a college player. It went, you know, very patiently and I think methodically started to put more and more points and production on the board for the Admirals. But he was hardly a ballyhooed prospect. And then lo and behold, here he is at age 26. If you go back to the end of last year, he's averaged a point per game for about a half a season now, 42 games.
Yes.
And he's a UFA at the end of the year, which is a really interesting one. So I know there's a mutual interest to try to get that next contract. But I was thinking to myself around the league, there aren't too many guys that have that resume that Tommy Novak does. So how do you try to come up with a new deal?
Well, I think this. The number one thing you always try to do are comparables. Like, who are the people who produce at the same level that Tommy Novak does now? So that's one of the things you look at. Number two, Nashville knows him better than anybody else. So, like, that's the advantage the Predators have here, is that they've been the team that's invested in him. They've been the team that's seen him up close. You know, the one situation, it was funny. You gave me a bit of a homework assignment on this one, Willie. So I was talking about it with another person, and they took me back to 2011. And there was a player named Ville Leino. Now, Ville Leino came over from, he came over from Finland to North America when he was 25 years old. He played a season in Detroit, and then, or I think he played three seasons in Detroit, and then he went to Philadelphia and had a really good playoff for them. And then he went on as a free agent just before he turned 28. And Buffalo gave him a big deal, 6 years, $4.5 million, six times four and a half. And it was, like, it just didn't work. It turned out to be a terrible, terrible contract for the Sabres. And, you know, the thing that they said, the thing that he said to me about that was, he said that the biggest advantage that Nashville will have in this case is that they do know him better than anybody else. And people still talk about that Leino deal. Not to say that Novak would be a flop if he signed anything like that, but those kinds of situations do scare people. And what they'll say is, what he's going to bet, he said, what he's going to bet Nashville's going to try to do is they're going to go to Novak and they're going to say, look, here are your comparables based on where you are right now. And he says what they're going to do is, he thinks they'll either offer him shorter term and maybe a bit bigger money, because he's at the clock, as you say, anyone can talk to him. Or they're going to offer him longer term at a little less money. Like, he doesn't necessarily see that he's going to get like an 8x8 deal or a Forsberg deal or anything like that. But he said that unless Nashville's absolutely convinced here, that he thinks that they'll try to hedge their bet one way or the other, whether it's term or salary. That's what he thinks. He said he could be totally wrong. He said he's heard the same thing that you had, Willie, is that Nashville wants to keep him and they believe the player wants to stay. And I think that's the most important thing of all, because generally deals get done when that happens. But he said that one of the things he kind of wondered about was, would they hedge their bet in terms of term one way or the other, and then offer, no, if it's shorter term, a bit more money to make Novak happy, or longer term, a bit less money to make the team feel a little bit more content about the bet they were making.
It's interesting. Last year, right as he was starting to at least become a regular player, and it didn't happen overnight. I mean, you got to remember, he wasn't even on the opening day roster. I think it was December before he got in there, but they gave him a one-year extension. And now I think if you could wave a magic wand, they could go back and say, man, if we had just offered him 2 or 3 years, we'd look really smart right now. So I wonder about in-season talks. And now, as opposed to maybe in 2 months, where his stock could keep rising or he could level off, and that could change the talks. It's a really tricky decision that a first-year GM is probably managing. And a guy that's never made a ton of money, right? Tommy Novak's never made even $1 million in a year.
That's true. I think the one thing that you have to remember is this. I don't think Nashville's going to be afraid here one way or the other, because they know the guy. Like, they're making – no team here can make a better evaluation of Tommy Novak than the Predators can.
and that is their advantage. And unless you guys tell me I'm wrong, I think Novak would probably feel on some level grateful that the Predators put him in this position. Now, as you said, this is the best time for him to take care of his family, and I always understand that. I never have a problem with an athlete, especially one in Novak's situation, going for the best deal he can when the iron's hot. And the other thing is the cap's going up this year by a chunk, so it's the perfect time to be an unrestricted free agent. But again, I think Nashville's advantage in this case is that they know the player better than anyone else. Like I was talking to this other guy, and he was saying to me, you know, to a lot of other teams, Novak is still a mystery. You know, like there's definitely teams who are watching him, and there's definitely teams who have liked what they've seen, but there really isn't a lot of runway there to really have a great idea of him. And also, like, he's never played an NHL playoff game. Or as he played that four games against Colorado that one year. And that was you'd have to remind me about that. He hasn't played a lot, and that series was unfortunately really lopsided. So you don't get a real
We've all tried to forget that series, Elliot. We've all tried to forget that one. That didn't go well.
So it's you don't really have a handle on, like, you know, those kinds of games, what kind of resume is there.
Right.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, and the 32 Thoughts Podcast. Elliot, we appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate it, you too. Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. Coming up next, we'll get into what we just broke down with Elliot. Potential trade rumors. How realistic does Willie think they are? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.